In part one of this special two-part episode of the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast, Sam and I explore real, anonymously submitted stories from the field, all centered around moments when things didn't go to plan while working with a therapy dog. From unexpected behaviours to tricky client interactions and medical concerns, we unpack common themes and share practical tips for staying calm and professional. We also highlight the value of strong training skills, hygiene protocols, and clear communication. Whether you're new to the industry or a seasoned pro, this episode offers relatable insights and real-world strategies to help you feel prepared and supported. Tune in, reflect, and don't miss part two coming up next for even more community-sourced stories and solutions. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Max, the social media manager for Therapy Dogs Australia, and with me, as always, is Sam King, the owner of Therapy Dogs Australia. How are you, Sam?
I am feeling pretty good. Thank you, Max.
That's pretty great. Good. I'm a bit giggly because we've got a good podcast.
We've actually just done
today.
We've just done some podcast prep, planning prep, which we never do. And it's a bit fun. So this is a bit of a fun one. In some ways, and in some ways it's very serious.
So. Yes, there's a little bit of both.
Just know that we are taking it seriously, even though we're laughing.
Yeah. Some of the giggles are out of discomfort.
Some of the laughter is nervous. Yeah. Maybe 80% of it.
Yes. Most of it, yeah. So back in February, we created a form that was open to anyone who follows us. Doesn't have to be Therapy Dogs Australia graduates, literally anyone in the animal assisted world who has some spicy stories to share with us, experiences working in animal assisted services. Some are spicier than others. We got quite a few, so we were only going to talk about a few that we feel is relevant and helpful to share and discuss.
Yes, we've combined some are similar. So we've combined some of the topics and we'll just speak about them more generally. Yep. The reason that we wanted to do this is because, so first of all, I get to hear stories like this all the time and I think, oh my gosh, we need to talk about these things. And as a bit of a preparation or bringing to front of mind, so people who are looking at getting into this industry or who are already working in the industry, just to remember that things can go wrong. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like we don't see that discussed very often or at all on like, how can this actually go wrong? So we're going to talk about, I've got like so many examples in my own practice of how things can go wrong, like quite a number. So I might pepper some of my own stories in here as well. Yeah. I mean, some of these things feel like there's probably some stories that I wouldn't tell publicly.
That's why we made the form anonymous as well, which I think helped some people. Yeah. Yeah. But I think there is like a bit of a misconception, like, and I think this is the argument when people say, oh, like, what's a therapy dog? Like, I'll just bring my dog from home into work. Like, well, this is the reason that you train therapy dogs. You don't just bring your pet dog from home, because how are you going to manage things when things go wrong? It's not just about when things are going right.
And who do you get help from? Because I've had there's a couple of these stories in here that I already know about because the people have come to me and said, oh my gosh, like this, but who are you talking about stuff with? If you're not with an organization, I don't know, but I think through some of, there's a couple of stories that came through that we on reading were like, okay, we probably need to resolve that. And we can, this is the thing, we can resolve some of these things. So we need to actually maybe discuss these things that we actually can resolve, because we have the power of being accredited dog trainers. So we actually can navigate some of these situations. You don't have to live like this, people. So
you don't have to live like this. It can be different for you.
This can be different. Okay. I guess like the things that we were more interested in hearing about were the things that were kind of like outside of your control, or like maybe silly mistakes or things that happened and that resulted in something that wasn't ideal. And then, you know, that's where your real skills as a handler need to come out. And when you're a beginner handler, even if you're experienced in your scope of practice, if you're a beginner handler, it's tricky. Like these things become a lot easier with years and years of experience. So we understand that, like, sometimes your initial responses to things aren't going to be as polished as what they will be in 5 years' time.
Or how you imagine you're going to handle the situation, and then when it happens, you're like, ah, oh, oh dear.
Okay, so I think, Max, let's go through some of these more like general ones that we kind of lumped together, and then we'll go into. We've got a couple that we're going to read out of the submissions that we're going to read out because I think they have great learning moments in them.
They are.
All right, things that popped up. So toileting accidents, yes, absolutely, these can happen. So we talk about this to try and help prepare you in our course, where we talk about having your cleanup kit with you at all times, because toileting accidents do happen, even in, mature house-trained dogs. They can happen for any reason. I myself have had a number of times the dogs have had, a poo explosion just seemingly out of nowhere. They've picked up something on their wee walk earlier in the day or whatever, haven't noticed, and then they've had,
Just had to go.
just have to go. Sonny actually always had quite a sensitive tummy, so whenever he went to the door, like in someone's session, I learned very quickly that I had to leave right now or he was going to have a poo explosion in the room.
Vomiting
That
as well comes into that.
absolutely. The problem with a poo explosion is that it stinks really fast. So the biggest thing there, guys, if it happens, you must clean it up as soon as possible. The easiest way to do that is to have, so we always have our puppy pads, like, those puppy wee pads. I always have those in the kit. And so you just need to quickly, because what you can do, because it's plastic on one side, so you can kind of cover your poo explosion and like wipe it up, and like carpet sucks, but wipe it up as quickly as possible. And then it needs to go into a plastic bag and then like double bag it and then get it outside of the room as quickly as possible, as quickly as possible. Once the smell is in the room, it's really tricky to,
It just hangs. It
it
just.
hangs. So puppy pad, plastic bags, and then obviously you need your floor cleaner, so your appropriate floor cleaner. So whether it's carpet or, like, here I've got carpet and tiles here, but certainly you need your proper cleaner. In the client session, I wouldn't normally do like a big proper clean up. I would get it to the point where it's like, this is not now
It's
disrupting the session.
not affecting the client.
It's not affecting the client.
Have
Yeah,
you
the
found
double.
any particular cleaners to be fairly like quick and useful though?
Oh,
Like I imagine tiles are easy. You can just get some like easy wipes or whatever, but
I'm so
oh
pleased you asked. I'm so pleased you asked,
yes.
Maxine. I actually use Urine Free, which this may become a paid advertisement. Urine Free. Anyone, so that they sent us a heap of samples, and I've been using them and sending them out to people, and they gave us a discount code. So that's on our website, and it's in all of our in a lot of our emails and stuff as well. But yeah, Urine Free, really good. I have been just kept using it.
Because
So
they've got quite a few things, haven't they? They've got like an air freshener as well, or like something
yeah, and like
like a
grass
deodorizer.
turf cleaner and stuff like that, they've added to there. They've got a UV, they've got a light. I don't have this yet. They've got a light, and you can use the light to see if there's urine stains.
Ooh, useful. Very useful, especially for clinic rooms.
So useful. I'm definitely going to get one. So I don't know if other places have those, but yeah, I was just pretty stoked about that. So have a cleaner ready to go and air freshener spray. So like your Glen 20 type sprays and stuff like that, just to quickly spray the area even before you clean it, if you just have to get on with your session. Same for vomit, like just get the smell under control as quickly as possible. And then yeah, just have a think about, like, toileting accidents should be happening because of a unique circumstance. They shouldn't be happening as a, like, oh, I forgot to take the dog out. Let's get the dogs on good schedules for their toilet breaks. Let's think about those things before we go. Make sure the dogs are nice and relaxed. Like if you're going to do a hospital visit, for example, when you arrive to the hospital, the dog's going to be in a new environment, and that can sometimes for dogs be a bit funny, and they might not feel like they can go to the toilet. Like even if you walk around for a couple of minutes out on a grass area. So that those are the times when I would arrive with more time, so that you can really just chill in that area until the dog habituates and then feels like they can go to the toilet. Very handy to get your toileting cues on command, because I know that if I've given my toilet commands, my dogs know now's the time to go. And if they don't go, it's because they don't need to, because 9 times out of 10, they'll go when I tell them this is the time. Those things are just really handy. Not crucial, but really handy.
If you have ongoing issues as well, really worth checking on what's going on there with the vet. But also we've got a great podcast that we did a while back with Narelle Cook and Canizuticals. Yeah, about,
Gut
gut
health.
stuff and breath stuff and all of those things that need
We
to be
talk
under
about,
control.
smelly farts and how to get those things under control and stuff like that. So definitely go back and have a look at that podcast with Canineceuticals, Darrell Cook, and reach out to her if you're having issues. Okay, toileting accidents, vomiting, stuff like that. Dogs humping things and people came up a couple of times. So obviously, pretty awkward things to happen. If your dog is humping, so sometimes dogs will have a special relationship with a special item. It's like Sunny had a purple gorilla that was his special friend.
Dougie's got one. He's got this giant teddy bear and it's love.
Just obviously don't have those special toys in the environment. Or if it's a bed or something like that, don't have those things in the environment. Remove them and replace them with something that's quite different. Usually that there's a number of dogs where that will actually solve what's going on. If they're humping people, I would say that's pretty inappropriate, guys, and we need to address that. I would be letting my dogs know that it's under no circumstances is it appropriate for you to hump a human being, and I would be working on that outside of your clinical practice, and just making that really clear that, like, for humans are off limits, because that's quite confronting if dogs are doing that to a human.
Yes, especially big dogs. I mean,
Oh,
strong.
like how full on? Like, okay, no, thank you, dog. If you've identified an issue like that, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm working on it outside of the workplace, but like, what do I do? Keep your dog on lead. Keep your dog on lead. Because this humping behavior is often an over-arousal thing. That's why it happens, because the dogs get over-aroused. So I would say to you, keep the arousal down while you're dealing with this outside of the workplace. Easiest way to do that, keep the dog on lead. If you can keep the dog's arousal down without keeping them on lead, then great, do that. But yeah, I would just be preventing situations where that would happen in the workplace, and then working on it outside. And then once the dog's got the clear picture that, like, you just do not hump people, then you can expand your horizons a little bit in the workplace. But until then, I would be absolutely preventing it, because every time they get to practice that, obviously, that's a great time.
If you have a laugh and a giggle with it once, then they'll think, oh, this is fine, this is fun, because everyone laughs.
Absolutely. Laughter can be a huge reinforcer to
And it can
dogs.
be really hard to not laugh because it can be very funny,
Oh.
but like try not to let them think that that's a new game.
I can't think of, like, maybe even one single time in my life where I've been able to not laugh. So if something funny happens, I'm laughing. If something scary happens, I'm laughing. If something sad happens, I am laughing. So
So we'll be doing a lot of laughing in this
I'm
podcast.
basically just walking around giggling. Just in a
Sometimes,
state
correct
of
me if I'm
giggle.
wrong, Sam, sometimes humping can also be like a sign of discomfort, or like it can be when it's so definitely like your dog isn't usually a humper and they're humping, it can be a sign of something else going on too, which is also something to keep in mind.
Like, almost like a displacement behavior. Yeah, things like that. Nala humps other dogs because she's a little sicko. So she used to hump Sunny. She doesn't do it to Oliver. She would not never dare. She used to do it to Sunny, and now she does it to Penny. And if that ever happens in the presence of a client, I just simply say no and take her off the other dog. And then it might take, again, it's in the context of high arousal play. And she redirects. It'll be when, like, the other dog is playing, and like with a toy or whatever, and she doesn't really want to play with the toy. She just doesn't really know what to do with herself. And then she's over aroused, and then she just jumps on the other dog.
Yeah, Dougie does a bit of that as well sometimes when he's particularly excited.
So we just tell her no. So I think it's hard. It can be tricky to stop them from starting that. It certainly can be done with a lot of management. But yeah, it's, if their dogs are humping people, I would say that's something that we probably should address. So, moving on from that, we've got humping things, dogs barking at people. Okay, this is a concern. I know that dogs barking at people seems like a normal behavior that, dogs bark, but I do think that that is a concern. And we teach this in our courses. If dogs are barking at clients, we just have to remember and recognize that there are lots of people listening to our podcast, and a lot of them haven't done our courses. So sometimes I think things are prior knowledge, but they aren't. So I'll just describe this in more detail. We don't let our dogs bark at our clients. We don't let our dogs bark in the workplace. If they're barking in play, that's different. But barking at the front door, like when people arrive, is a no-go. In workplaces, a dog's barking is almost always inappropriate and not welcome. So it's annoying, it's loud, it's triggering. People don't understand, like, depending where you work, people aren't expecting a dog to be barking, et cetera,
Some
et cetera.
people also who maybe are not that experienced with dogs might think barking is like an aggressive thing too. Even if the dog's barking at
Absolutely.
something else, it can be misunderstood or misinterpreted pretty quickly.
Oh, dogs barking at the door, like, for sure. It's pushes people back. Like, people kind of go like, oh, like, that's what dog barking's meant to do. Like, it's meant to be like, oh, don't come in here, like, stranger, alert, alert. Setting, so, like, my dogs work when they're working from home and they're running around and playing and barking and stuff, like, that doesn't really cause any problems. It just upsets people and offends people. So the whole idea for us having our dogs in the workplace is that they make people feel welcome and wanted, and dogs barking at people, it does trigger the opposite feeling of like, oh, get out of here. Get out of here, person. We don't know you. Anyway, it's not that hard to like our dog, all our teams, that's their expectation.
And dogs learn context too. Like Sam, you were saying, yours no, absolutely no barking in sessions at the clinic, but they'll bark at the front door. Like they are capable of understanding context.
The difference is that when your dogs bark at home at your front door and all that sort of stuff, like, my dogs do that too, and I want them to, so that I know when someone's gonna try and break into my house or whatever. That's fine. But the reason that that would be really hard to stop if you didn't want your dogs barking at your property where you live, is because you're not always there to interrupt it. That is the difference of the workplace, is that your dog is with you all the time. So from the very first time you take them in there, if they bark at the door, you just correct it and go, no, like, no, we don't bark at the door here. And they don't do it. Like, they just don't do it. So I absolutely believe that the vast, vast majority of dogs can have that expectation. If there are dogs that are struggling with that kind of thing, then there are other management tools we can use as well. So that can include things to make life easier for the dogs, things like background noise, things like, frosting curtains, frosting glass, that sort of stuff, to reduce the stimulus for the dogs, to make life easier for yourselves. And, like, if you're starting with a dog that's a little bit older and they're just sort of a little bit already decided that that's how they live their life, then you might find that a bit trickier. Some dogs are just pretty barky.
Yeah, some just have a lot to say.
Every time I come back from, so over school holidays, Queensland school holidays, I usually work from home running intensive courses, but I'm not at the clinic for a couple of weeks. And when I go back, usually the first day that I go back with Nala, she will bark at the sound of our glass sliding door at the clinic. And she just gets told straight away, no. And then she's like, oh, that's right.
I don't do
I
this here. Yes.
thought I was at home where I do whatever I
I
want.
imagine also this is why just detouring quickly. When we say, like, don't take your dogs into your workplace before they're ready, is also because they probably have a greater chance of picking up on these habits before you know what to do or how to handle them.
Absolutely. And that's usually the case, like, when people come to us for their training and they've already been taking the dog to work for 6 months and the dog's already got behavioral problems at the workplace, they have a bigger task ahead of them than the teams who have done the training first, got their working relationship happening with their dogs really well first, got the handling skills under control first, and then take the dog into the workplace, and from day one have those kinds of boundaries in place where it's like, oh, we just don't bark here. Like, it's not a big deal, we just don't bark here. That kind of thing makes a huge difference. That doesn't mean that you can't fix it if you've already got your dog barking in the workplace, but it might
Just
be a little
more
bit more
work.
difficult. You should be able to fix it, but we don't fix those things in the presence of our clients. Like, we just don't train our dogs like that in front of our clients. I'm, like, quite hesitant to use my no marker and things like that in front of my clients because I don't want them to copy me.
Oh, true. How would you handle that situation then?
We use our tone. Like
Yes.
you,
Yeah.
you're
Yeah. Yeah.
preempting it. If I have to use a no marker, I will. Like, but
You don't really find you need to.
yeah, I know. Like,
Yeah.
I guess I'm just thinking about Nala barking at the door. That's always happened when I've been in my room without a client. Would I do it in front of my clients? If she was doing that, I would, because it's important to me that she knows not to bark straight away. But maybe she only does it when we don't have a client, actually, because she's anticipating a client.
Yeah, someone coming in.
Yeah, because we don't have one. Maybe that's the case. I haven't actually thought about that. Dogs can bark at new and different things. So, someone that shows up wearing something that makes them look new and different, sometimes dogs will bark at that. If that's the case, we just need to be able to get that managed really quickly. It's really important. It's so offensive to the client. Like it's intimidating and it's all these things that ruptures relationship and all that sort of stuff. So I want my dogs in that kind of scenario. Oh, a good example is when a young person came in she was wearing a headband and it had like dragon wings on it because it was like book week or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And Nala was like, "What the shit?"
What?
And did that like while running up to her. You know that bark they do?
Yeah.
Where they're like pushing out their lips.
Yeah. Like she almost knows she shouldn't be barking, but she has to
running over to
say
her.
something.
I'm like, that could potentially be quite intimidating. In that kind of scenario, if that's already happening, like I just explained, I laugh at everything. So I think it's wise to like straight away go like, "Oh my goodness, Nala, who's that? Like, what have they got on them? Like, oh wow." Like, you know, and then it became, this is a kids group. So then it became like everyone was like, "Oh, Nala, it's the dragon." Like, you know, like this
Yeah.
was kids.
Make light of the situation for the
Make light of
client.
the situation, silly Nala, like, "Oh, that's so cute and funny, silly Nala," to just make sure that that relationship's not ruptured between her and the client. And then obviously it's like, so Nala's this very stable dog. So if you don't have a stable dog and you don't know what that looks like, for Nala, that is like her going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." And then immediately being like, "Oh, I know that girl and that's a human." And like, "Oh, that's so funny. Those are dragon wings." Like, that's silly. Like that's so the by what I'm explaining by that is the recovery time of the dog. Like he shouldn't get super frightened and she should recover really quickly. If your dog is getting super frightened and not recovering quickly, I would suggest that you speak to a professional about that for your dog's welfare, the welfare of your clients. Just remembering that we're talking to a lot of different people out there who
Yes.
maybe we haven't had a chance to meet before. That's not good. Okay. So if you've got a dog that's doing stuff like that, like I failed dogs in temperament assessments for barking at people holding umbrellas or wearing a hat. It's not on. It's if a dog is shook enough by that, they're not ready to be in the working role. That doesn't mean that they'll never be a therapy dog. It just means that they need work on that. So, and you can have a trainer help you with that stuff. And for most dogs, that those things can be resolved and we can improve their confidence. For some dogs, no, they're just a nervy dog and you know they're not going to be right for this type of work and that's okay. We need
Yeah.
to make choices that are good for them.
And I imagine also, while there's always the exception, like chalking it up and saying that, oh, they'll move on or they'll work through it themselves is probably not the best approach as well to go, oh, well,
No.
they'll get over it, or like often the issue can
In
become
the
worse.
Yeah, so it's tricky without going like for us to discuss in detail like how to deal with that stuff would take a while. So, you know, I'm not going to go into heaps detail now, but I will quickly say how you respond as the handler in those moments can absolutely determine your dog's thoughts and feelings about that type of situation for a long time. So, like we would just discuss, like if you laugh at things, that can reinforce a dog's behavior and they go, "This is a winning idea. This is a winning idea, and I'm sticking with it." Or if they balk at things and you also balk at the thing, or you freak out and panic because now the dog's barking and you're embarrassed and the client's upset and you're like, "Oh my God," which is totally normal for like an early handler to be like, "Oh my God, like something's ah," like I totally get that. It's taken me a long time like to not respond like that, but also thousands of hours of handling, like thousands and thousands of hours of handling all different species of animals in these contexts where it's like the show must go on.
Yeah,
Like
fake it till you make it.
fake
Fake
it
your
till you make a
panicky
baby. Like
interest.
we need to sort this, get we need to get through this. I need to make sure that this dog is safe and okay, but I need to make sure that this client is safe and okay. And that is really tricky. And that's why this job is hard. But yes, we need to absolutely try and deal with things the best way possible, so that we
Yeah.
don't create a lasting problem. But like I said, the show must go on. The work time is the show, and the training is your rehearsals. So we deal with this shit in your rehearsals. We deal with this in training outside of the workplace. So if that something pops up in the workplace, I probably wouldn't just be like, oh, never mind. That probably won't happen again. I would be like, oh, okay, we might need to actually have a look at that and, set up scenarios or, get some advice from a professional on how we can deal with these things in the moment and also from a training perspective in terms of better preparing our dog for being in unpredictable situations. I think we're going to go into some more specifics. I've got one more that's a little bit more sort of specific before we go into like the actual stories that we're going to read out. So, dogs getting hurt in sessions is a real shitty time.
Or
Not
feeling or being sick, like,
yeah.
in injury and illness.
Yes, I would probably categorize this next topic as a acute injury. So something that is like happening right now and this dog is injured. I don't know if I've told this. I've told the story thousands of times because Oliver's now 10. But when he was little, he was chasing Sunny with a toy and looking at Sunny, and he hit the pole in my room
Oh, yes.
that's like
Oh.
holding the building up and concussed himself. I was like, he was young. And I was like,
I think I
oh
might
my
have heard
God.
this story,
Oh
Paulie.
my God. And it was
Oliver.
the Lord help me. Last session of the day, last 15 minutes of that session. And I obviously was internally panicking. He's 10 now, 9 and a half
Very
years ago.
young.
He was
Yeah.
really young. And my previous dog to him, Isabel, I trained her for therapy dog work, but she got a brain injury and was like just an anxious mess. I've told this story, but when we went to a farm stay, she got picked by a horse. We didn't know that the fence wasn't a fence. Anyway, you live and learn. That was like 12 years ago. So the thing is, like, I had replaced her. Like, obviously, I still owned her as a dog. I had her until she was 7 when she died of cancer, but I had her, but I had replaced her with Oliver because
Yeah.
she wasn't going to make it as a therapy dog. It just wasn't the right thing for her moving forward. Too many things overwhelmed her. So then he concussed himself. And I was like, this is happening to me again. This is happening again. But I just did the quick math in my head around, so what do I do now? What do I do with a brain injury? And this is why you should do Dr. Olga's pet first aid course. Another plug, Dr. Olga, we've got a discount code for her too, TDA10. Jump on just Dr. Olga pet first aid, Google that, put the code in. I've done it. Excellent. Excellent first aid course. But I'm doing the quick math going, what can I do here? And there's nothing I could do. He's already hit his head. Do you know what
Yeah.
I mean? Just keeping him quiet, like the client hadn't realized like what had happened.
And
So I
assessing the
was,
severity, I suppose, as well. Quick
yeah.
decisions.
So I knew he was concussed because he was just a bit like sort of funny, but also he was drooling. And so I was like,
Oh,
oh no. Oh no.
oh.
Uh-oh. But I thought, okay, so I'm obviously going to take him straight to emergency. What's another 10 or 15 minutes to not upset this client, because she didn't know that he'd injured himself. She didn't realize. And I was like, okay. So I just sort of kept him with me and like kept him quiet and just let that session finish. And then got straight in the car and drove to emergency. So I think in the grand scheme of things, like, I don't know, maybe some people would hear that and be like, you're a savage. But remember that we're trying to negotiate the client's mental well-being as well. So I don't want her to be worried about the dog or feeling bad about it or anything like that. It's
Yeah.
10, 15 minutes. Like at that time, the pet emergency that I had to drive to was 45 minutes away or whatever. He's
And
not,
also, like,
he's,
you can picture, like, for this client, you would 100% want to choose her not noticing over her experiencing what could be for her really traumatizing to be seeing, like, the therapy dog hit his
because
head and then drool, and then she's processing this in maybe more of an intense way than someone else would.
well, and for context, the client presentation was, how can I say this, already not processing bad news well. That person particularly would have been particularly upset by that kind of thing and was a particularly vulnerable person as well. So don't add to that by me having these dogs here and this dog just bloody ran into the pole and hit its head. There's a lot of emergencies you can't do that with. And Dr. Olga's course will take you through exactly what they are. And we did a podcast with her. Just go listen to that. Yeah, you can get, that's free. Like, go listen to the podcast for the summary version. There's a lot of injuries you can't do that with. But the thing about having hit your head is that you've already hit your head. Like, he was fine. Like, if he was, like, literally unconscious. Like,
yes, well, then that's an,
that's
an issue.
An emergency. You can't hide. He's sleeping.
Yeah.
Just having a quick nap. He'll be all right. And an example of that, and I think I told some of these stories to Dr. Olga, I think, remembering this from.
Yeah.
Okay. The one that happened, because I know I told this story, where a horse colicked in the session and I had to end the session. And, you know, then we talked about, like, the protocols of, like, contacting the family. Like, once I knew that the horse was going to be okay, contacting the family and being like, just please let such and such know the horse is going to be okay.
Is you're giving yourself more work if you can, if it's okay to leave it for the 15 minutes, you're actually giving yourself less work because you won't have to be reassuring the client afterwards.
Yes. So this is where I got so obsessed with Dr. Olga and her course, is because I think that clinicians need to know what's an emergency and you need to end this client session and deal with this now, and what's not an emergency and I can finish this particular session without re-traumatizing this client and then cancel the rest of my day. Because it's so much easier. I'm having flipping deja vu. It's so much easier to cancel the rest of your day than what it is to end this session right now, because it's so hard to do that. And I told the story of Kiki when I thought she broke her tail.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I actually think she just broke her bloody tail. Like, I thought that. Like, I was like, she's broken her tail. But I was telling the girl, I was like, she's fine. She'll be fine.
Come on, let's take it.
And I did all this repairing because she's freaking out. Girl, freaking out. And I'm like, she's fine. Look, she's walking. Let's take her for a walk. Look, she's happy. And, you know, even though she just really hurt herself. And I did spring into, like, first aid, you know, mum, and make sure that she's not injured. I had to make sure that I could touch the tail and things like that, because now, like, this is dangerous to have a client around an injured dog.
Mm, absolutely.
It's dangerous because they might bite because they're hurt. So, you know, you've got to do, like, weigh these things up. There's a lot of responsibility going on here.
And also know your dog, because, like, Dougie, for instance, is the most sooky la-la. Like, he doesn't have to have broken anything to pretend like the whole world's falling apart. And so you've got to know what your dog can cope with, even if they aren't actually injured. If they're going to behave like that around a client, it's just as important.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I've mentioned more than once, Nala's been taken to emergency and had zero things wrong with her. And she's just been like laying on the ground like she's dead. And the vets have been like, that's pretty funny. And I'm like, yeah, it's hilarious. This is very funny. Ha ha ha. I think she's grown out of that a little bit. So lots of decision-making. Now, why are we talking about this? Because we do know of a situation, and the story did get sent in, but we'll save time from reading the whole account. But there is one scenario that we're aware of, that a dog had an ear infection and kid was scratching its ears, dog growled, kid scratched harder, and then the dog bit them. So that dog obviously got retired because you can't bite people. And that's a hugely traumatic situation for everybody involved. The child involved, the handler who did try and intervene before the bite, but just didn't have enough time.
I think also the handler said she wasn't aware that the dog had an ear infection.
Exactly. Handler didn't know that the dog had an ear infection. And that has happened countless times where it ends up that the dogs have got an ear infection. Ear infections can be really common. Flippin, listen to the Narelle Cook podcast, because ear infections are something, if they're recurring, you can do something about that. Actually, a dog gave me a little bite when I patted its feet when I was doing a pre-course consult. And I was like, I don't know, like, it was one of those really fluffy, curly dogs, because I was like playing with the dog and then I touched its feet and then it like gave me a little nip. And I was like, oh, does he not like having his feet touched? And they were like, oh, he's got like infected toes or whatever. Like, you know how, like,
oh, yeah.
Feet can get funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
Well, that's going to be a problem.
Good to know. So anyway, therapy dogs can't be biting people.
Also, a little heads up.
Yeah.
That
Okay. Cool. Good to know. I'm glad I know about that now. So dogs being injured, sick, all that sort of thing, it is a danger to the clients. And obviously it's bad for the dogs. Okay. So when something goes wrong, like the worst case scenario, like that ear infection story, and that someone actually gets bitten, that's a huge drama. Like that's a huge drama for us to go through. And it can be obviously very bad, very, very bad. We want to avoid those things at all costs. And, you know, hindsight is flipping amazing. And we can all sit here and be like, as if you
Yeah,
wouldn't
can all
know
judge
about that.
exactly.
You know, we can all say stuff like that, but I'm certainly in no position to be thinking that people should just know everything and do everything right the first time or never miss anything. You know, like things, shit happens. Shit happens. But, you know, we have a daily handling checklist for teams that helps them to, you know, every day you can go through and tick and flick, like, have you handled your dog today? Have you checked their ears? Have you touched their feet? Have you done all this handling? Like, you know, touch their belly, things like that, places that get commonly sore, hips, things like that, where dogs can be sore. It gets especially important as the dogs start to get older as well. You know, they're going to have more sore spots and things like that. So, really, really important that we do that sort of thing. We did have a story come through where a client threw a stick instead of the ball. They were playing with the ball with the dog, and instead of throwing the ball, they picked up a stick, threw the stick hit the dog. Dog cried out and barked at the client, and then just kept barking at the client for months. So that's not ideal.
No.
The thing that's out of your control there is that the client has picked up a stick and thrown it, and it's hit the dog. Even when you try, and like, I've had things happen where I've tried to be like, oh, like, the thing about sticks, throwing sticks for dogs, is that it is actually super dangerous. I know a friend of mine from high school, like her partner threw a stick for her little dog and like hit it in the eye, and they had to have its eye removed.
Pretty sure Dr. Olga actually mentions sticks in the
I think
podcast
she did
because
actually.
she sees it all the
All the
time.
time.
All the
Yeah.
time. Sticks are
Stick
just an
injuries.
issue.
Sticks are so dangerous.
Yeah.
So that's something that's, you know, out of your control. It hits the dog cries out. Oh God, like that's like we're, so far here we're up to the Kiki with the tail story, like where she, so for everyone that didn't listen to the Dr. Olga podcast, she was my one of my dogs, and she's younger, and I
A
let her out of
very
her
big
very,
LGD.
very big dog, which is a puppy, and I let her out of her pen, so that, because my client wanted to pat her, and then she sat back like she was gonna jump up, like she was gonna jump. But as she sat back, she sat on her tail and like yelped and carried on and acted like it was broken. And so I thought it was. So anyway, those are the kinds of things that can happen. And it's like, it's already happened now, but we've got to move on as quickly as possible. We've got to move. It's like a toddler falling over. We've got to move on as quickly as, but we need to assess this. Is your tail broken? Dog that got hit in the head with a stick. Is your eyeball popping out? Like, do you have an injury from this, or can we move on? And that dog was not able to move on. So that sucks. Eventually, it moved on after a few
Yeah, I
months.
think it was 2 months or something of, but there is also the just like, because I think the dog was exposed to that same client after that incident, and it was 2 months before the dog was okay with that client. I think that was the story,
Yeah, which
which is a bit questionable
isn't,
just in terms of how you would approach that if your dog is that scared that they're barking and reacting at clients for 2 months before they can calm down. Is it probably wiser to not put them in the same room until that dog is able to recover rather than using the sessions to help the dog
yeah.
recover?
And I guess like that's such a tricky, I can see where people might think we've got to repair this relationship, but at what cost? At what cost, like at what point do we just go, whoopsie, you know, this has gone to shit? Because I think for a dog to be not recovering, I'm suspicious about that. I've got suspicions about why is this dog not recovering? And I would, as the handler, I would be looking more deeply into that. I would be getting a professional's advice on that, because I have had a number of situations that have been compromising, and the dogs don't hold a grudge. So I think if the dog's holding a grudge like that, I think that might be a sign of something more going on. Or it could have been that just how it all went down in the moment it became more meaningful to the dog based on everyone's reactions. Because I think the client got very upset about the thing, which my client with the tail situation did too. So I just wonder, sometimes these things, like, we don't know all the details, but sometimes these things really are just so such a thing that's out of your control. But sometimes, like, I definitely have a protocol for how I handle stuff to try and minimize the long lasting effects for the dogs. And that, in summary, like, to oversimplify it, is move on. Assess for damage, make sure that we are not still injured, and then move on emotionally.
Would you say, Sam, in terms of that approach, say, if that happens again with someone, if the dog isn't able to recover by the next session, then be probably wise to get a professional in because you really do want a dog to have recovered by the next session.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
Absolutely. I want my dogs recovered in the session for
yeah,
sure.
like you
Like,
don't want that going on for 2 months.
that's what we mean by recovery time in dogs. Like, that's what resilience in dogs is. It's recovery
Because
time. So it's something that might sound like, let's talk more generally instead of I'm not talking about that specific situation anymore. Generally speaking, your dog should be able to recover quite quickly from offense if it's going to be, like, if it's a stable temperament dog. But there is a process to recovering a dog. There is a process to that. So it's not like we don't have to expect that dogs just get over stuff. You're their guide. You're their human guide through this world. And so you can recover the dog, and there's steps to that. So yeah, if we're not aware of what the steps to recovering, like, I don't know the situation or the person or who it is or whatever, but I would be interested in, like, what steps were taken to recover the dog versus, like, how did that get handled? And it's no great surprise to any, dog trainers or the people in the know that understand that, like, your emotional state is go yours and the client's emotional state is going to impact the dog's recovery. So there's a couple of nuances to that. But yeah, certainly maybe we don't know enough about that situation to comment on it, but it's worth review. It's worth reviewing, that kind of thing. Now, I'm going to read some of these out. This is a good one. Okay. Ready? About 5 minutes into our first appointment for the day, the 10-year-old client I was seeing starts to scratch at his neck. He starts to get pretty distressed and scratches more and more. He asks if I can see anything on his neck because it's really itchy. It was looking pretty inflamed and uncomfortable. I asked if he had any allergies. He said he's only allergic to peanuts. We stopped the appointment. I called his dad, who obviously was somewhere nearby, and the kid got picked up. I called them later that morning to check up. They said that they went to the chemist nearby and the kid was fine. I tried to think back to how it could have happened, and then I remembered that my dog greeted the kid with a big lick on his neck. Then I also remembered that at home that morning I had given my dog a spoonful of peanut butter.
Oh man.
Oh no. I like this example because everyone's fine, but also we talk about this in our training because we use treats sometimes in some of the activities with the dogs, like dog puzzles or dog tricks or things like that that we do with kids. And I used to use these little biscuits, Mother Hubbard's biscuits, that they had were like peanut butter and honey or something like that. This is 10 years ago, before we had all the options that we have now, because they kept better. But anyway, so I realized, like, why am I using these? I got nuts in them. Like, what am I thinking? Like, nuts is one of the most common allergies.
Oh, yeah.
That's why
And
we
so
talk
serious.
so serious. That's why we talk about it in the course, because I had that realization myself where I was like, why am I using peanut butter? Because I used to buy peanut butter everything for the dogs. Why am I doing this? Like, nuts. Like,
And
no.
of all the nuts, too.
I know. Like, I know. And peanut butter's in so many dog things.
So many. You know, it's on par also with stories where people have to be really careful, especially hospital dogs or aged care dogs that have a raw food diet who are exposed to people who are immunocompromised. The same, gotta be so
Well,
careful.
the jury's out on that, because Brittany, the pet girl, sent me a heap of studies on that. That
Oh,
looks,
please. What was the summary?
it just looks like there's no evidence of that. Just looks like there's no
Okay.
evidence of that. Do your own research, guys. I have actually included a study that's in the course now. That's one of those. So I just think a part of that. Okay, so I think the difference is comparing the raw food diet to a kibble diet. I think when you look at kibble, it's got just as much shit in it, if
Very
not
true.
more. Like the recalls on kibble
Very
for
true.
salmonella. Like it's got, so I think it wasn't the difference between raw and kibble that people should be considering. It's whether or not dogs should be licking people and what risks, which people should be being licked and not licked and what the risks might be there. So we always tell people, like, I'm happy for my dogs to lick my clients if the client is happy with it because my clients like it. Like my,
Relationship
a
building.
lot of my clients really, really like it. They think that that means that the dog is kissing them and it means that they love them. So if the parents are happy, like if they've got a dog at home that's licking them, like whatever, you know, like that's, the parents are happy without, yeah, accept the risks, you know. But certainly, like having good hygiene protocols in place is really important. So, and of course, like things like this that can happen, like who knows? Like, are you gonna, what are you gonna
That
remember?
is such an
Everybody's,
easy mistake to make.
but even like, what about schools? Like, where there's like hundreds of kids, like you're not gonna know every kid's like allergies or whatever.
No.
So, in some scenarios, it's gonna be safest that the dogs aren't licking people. But in some scenarios, we see just such a huge benefit from it. So it's kind of like, okay, well, which way do we go here? Choose your own adventure. I can just only be honest and say, like, I let my a lot of my clients are just so adamant trying to get the dogs to lick them. So whereas a lot of my clients don't want the dogs licking them at all. So you know, anything that we allow like that, we need to also be able to ask the dogs not to do. Okay, so that one was pretty juicy.
Yeah, that was a good one.
This is a pretty chill one. So, a funny. I have more than one dog. I left the multi-story car park at work on a stinking hot day, so indicating a lot of effort, and had put the wrong named bandana on my dog. So there's two different bandanas and they've got names on them, and the wrong bandana is now on the dog. I should have gone back and swapped the bandana over, but I didn't. As per the previous context, it was hot. For the first half hour, I corrected people when they said hello and used the dog's name. After about an hour, it was just getting too hard, and it was easier for the dog to just swap identities with her sister, including her age. Still hoping I didn't mess with her head. Brain explosion emoji. That's a fun
Yeah, no harm.
one. No harm done. No victims.
Yes.
This one is a bit more in your face.
Hi, everyone. We're going to pause and wrap up part one there. Part two will be released soon and we'll pick up right where we left off with more community-sourced stories and practical advice. Please note that the next episode contains discussions around some sensitive topics and distressing scenarios, so listener discretion is advised. We hope these shared experiences have offered you some insight, reassurance, and tools for handling the unexpected with care and confidence. And we'd like to say a big thank you to those who were brave enough to share their stories with us. Make sure you're following the podcast so you don't miss it. And as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts or stories. You're not alone on this journey.